Wednesday, Senate Committee on Government Operations, Wednesday, January 23rd, 1991, 3 o'clock p.m., Hearing Room B, public hearing on Senate Bill 298 and 299.
Operations, so please come to order. First bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 298. Clerk Weiss, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Burton Wiest. With me is Metro Councilor Richard Devlin, who is chair of Metro's Government Affairs Subcommittee, and we are here on behalf of the Metropolitan Service District. And I wanted to, Senate Bill 298, ask you if you could look at the hand-engrossed version dated 1-23-91 of Senate Bill 298, which is the bill we are here today to support.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to let everybody else know that I had some other amendments drafted that would change the commission appointment and make the legislators in the district the appointing.
As most of you probably know, in the last election in November, the voters approved ballot measure 1, which provides for Metro to have a home rule charter. The process outlined in ballot measure 1 would be for the legislature to establish the parameters for a Metro Charter Review Commission, and that commission would then form a charter, and it would go to a vote of the people, and once approved by the vote of the people, would become the operating document for the Metropolitan Service District. This is not unlike the charter review process that's done by every city in Oregon, where they have their own home rule charter, which specifies how they operate and how they're organized as a city. For example, some cities have a strong mayor form of government, such as Beaverton and Portland and Troutdale in the past, and then other cities have forms of government where they have a city manager and a system of government with an advisory council that establishes policy. This Charter Review Commission that would be established by this legislation would have similar authority to establish the parameters and decide under what procedures the Charter Review Commission shall act. Before you, in Senate Bill 298, in the engrossed version, is a version that myself and Senator Otto, the chairman, and others have been working on for the last few weeks to try to get some consensus as much as possible from all the various affected parties, which include the local governments in the metropolitan region and the metro councilors and the metro executive. Under the current system of organization for Metro, there is a region-wide metro executive, Rena Kuzma, and she is elected by the entire metropolitan region. Then there are 12 sub-districts where the councilors, such as Councilor Devlin, are elected by the voters in that district. The council has policy making authority and is a part-time body, and the metro executive is a full-time person and has executive and administrative authority within the council. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, if it's agreeable, is go through the provisions of 298 as amended and explain to you perhaps what the differences are from the other proposals. The heart of our amendments is to provide for a 16-person Metro Charter Commission to be established. Basically, there would be 6 people appointed by local governments in the region, 6 people appointed by the Metro Councilor, 2 people appointed by the Metro Executive, and 2 people appointed by the legislature, one by the Speaker of the House and one by the President of the Senate. This would create a Charter Review Commission of 16 members, which would then, under the procedures provided in here, draft a Metro Charter and submit it to a vote of the people. The local government members would be selected in the following manner. Each county, there are 3 counties, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington, would each select 1 person for the commission. The cities in each county would then select 1 person from cities in each county for a total of 6. metro councilor districts, there are 12, would be combined, and the two metro councilors in each of their districts would appoint a person to the commission. I have passed out to you a map of how we would propose those metro council districts would be merged together. Mr. Chairman, I'd note in the draft, this map is slightly different from the combination that was done in the draft. The Legislative Council draft put them together as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This varies slightly, and if this proposal is accepted by the committee, we'd ask that this bill be amended to reflect the joining of the districts that we've done on the map as opposed to what's listed in the bill. The Metro Councilors would select their person. Councilor Devlin will explain to you a little bit about how that process would take place. Rena Kuzma, the Metro Executive, would pick two, one of which would be the chairman of the Charter Review Commission. So she would pick the chair, and she would have a second appointment. And as I mentioned, the legislature would pick the last two for a total of 16. This process, since Senator Otto and myself and the Metro Council have discussed this, we have spent the last 2 weeks trying to contact as many of the local governments in the area as possible to get their opinion about this, because obviously Metro impacts them greatly. We have done so, and we have some of them here today who have signed up to testify. One last point on this proposal. It also provides that members of this Charter Review Commission shall not be elected officials, nor shall they be employees of a local government, nor their spouses or immediate relatives be employees of a local government. We did not include the prohibition on state government because it was our concern that we did not want to exclude school teachers or college professors or those kinds of people who are state employees. But we did exclude employees and near relatives of local governments, which are cities, counties, and special districts within the metropolitan region. There is obviously no prohibition against a legislator, and we would expect that the appointees made by the legislature would be, in fact, legislators from the area. The reason for that is simply that we wanted the local governments to have a strong role as well as the Metro Council, as obviously they are greatly impacted by how this charter is going to be organized. Yet at the same time, we wanted this truly to be a citizens' charter review commission and not to be a forum of local governments or a forum of local elected officials trying to create a regional government, and we felt this was the best way to have that spirit on the Charter Review Commission.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before we go any further, could I ask the staff to give me the amendments that are the dash one amendments, not hand engrossed? I mean, a copy of that so I can look at them. Would that, do you mind, Mr. Chair?
No.
Thank
no,
you.
Yeah, more for
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Councilor Richard Devlin if he could take a minute and explain how Metro is approaching this process.
Richard? Thank you, Mr.
If
Chairman.
You would identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Richard Devlin, a Metro Councilor from Subdistrict 4 and the chair of the Council's Government Affairs Committee. The Council has considered this particular matter to be of a very high priority and has discussed it in detail, and the legislative task force of the council has reviewed the amendments that are in the engrossed version and agree with all of the amendments that have been proposed. We also believe that our partners within the region, the 24 cities and the three counties, should be agreeable to these amendments because I think it sets up a very good structure for this type of commission. I would like to also point out to the committee that the Governmental Affairs Committee is already starting discussions on criteria for selection of members of the commission, because we think it is very important that we select individuals that have a regional perspective, and we are going to be doing a good deal of discussion between members of the council to ensure that parties are appointed for our appointments, both from the council and the executive, that have that viewpoint. I would like to point out what Burton Wiest pointed out relative to the matching of the districts. Unfortunately, we did have two districts that are not numerically in order, but are geographically combined. So that's why we had to make one amendment to the order that's in the engrossed version. But I think this is a very good arrangement, particularly for the council districts, because it'll give a regional view, and it's a very good arrangement because the two councilors have to agree on the appointment that's going to be made.
I might add that I was talking to Richard one evening, and originally in the original bill, we had the councilors, one councilor, how did we have that? We had the councilors of the Metro District, and the councilors that had the majority of their district in a county would get together and choose one representative on the Charter Commission. And I did talk to Richard about it, and he came up with a much more simpler way of choosing those people, and I think a better way, and it would provide more people on the Charter Commission. Thank you for that suggestion.
You're welcome, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, one last, there's a blank line that needs to be filled in terms of funding. On the hand-engrossed version of 298, it's page 2 at the bottom, line 37. The Metro Council has approved and placed in their budget the sum of $100,000 to fund the Charter Commission. And we would ask that that language be amended on that line to reflect the amount of $100,000 from district funds to fund the commission. We would and suggest that the language about cent per elector of the district be dropped, and it just simply state that for the purpose of paying expenses of the committee and the preparation of the charter, I read the wrong line. Starting on line 37, an amount of $100,000, and then delete to the word greater on line 38, and then it would begin for the purpose of paying the expenses of the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Cease.
Did you want to have 100,000, or you want to have no less than 100,000 in the event that there needs to be more meetings in more parts of the district? Might want to think about that.
All right. The 100,000 was, Senator Cease, the 100,000 was, you know, the estimate, and it was an estimate. And
well, Mr. Chair, if we say 100,000 in here, I think that's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. No more, no less. It says shall. So I would suggest you'd want to say no less than, Mr. Chair.
I have no objections to that.
Thank you, Senator Cease. I think that'd be the...
More for us, Burton?
No, sir.
I have one thing I want to bring up. You notice this legislation, it does have the emergency clause. And I think that most of the members of this committee know my reluctance to emergency clauses. However, I think it's necessary in this case so that we can have the House work on the bill and do whatever they want to. And if a conference committee is needed, we can do that. But then when it goes to the governor, it's effective immediately upon the approval of the governor. And the reason for that is so that we can start the process of appointing the members of the Charter Commission, and then they have 30 days to go ahead and hold their first meeting. So that will expedite matters, and then hopefully they can get their work done, and it would appear on the ballot in May of 92. And if that occurs, then we can go ahead and have the election in November of 92.
Mr. Chair, we welcome that, and as Councilor Devlin noted, we're already trying to work to get started to implement this, not trying to do it before you've approved it or given us the authority, but rather so that we can hit the ground running as soon as this bill passes the legislature.
Senator Springer?
A couple quick issues I'd raise for comment or response by our witnesses. First of all, as far as the language relating to the money, we might want to, in addition to Senator Cease's comments, which I think are right on, we might want to draw this in a way so that we're not restricted if other funds are available. Perhaps, you know, I'm not anticipating that there's going to be a whole lot of private or foundation or grant money. There could be. I don't know if there are any federal funds. I mean, I would leave this as open as possible so that you don't get hung up or limited in any way in terms of being able to use monies that may come to you for this purpose. And that's just a matter of finding the correct language that will accomplish that. Secondly, the question about who appoints the chair. Are we still with the language here that the Metro executive is going to appoint the chair? I think I raised this earlier with Mr. Wiest, and I guess I still need to be convinced that the Metro chair ought to be the person that makes that, or I kind of feel like the group itself ought to decide that, to be perfectly honest, or maybe a mid-range would be that the chair nominates subject to the approval of the Metro Council. I'm just kicking around some ideas here, and Burton, if you'd like to respond, feel free. Or
Mr. Chairman, Senator Springer, the logic that is behind that is the fact that the Metro Executive is elected by the entire region. The Metro Executive is the one person who represents the entire region on the council and is not elected by districts. And the feeling was is that the Metro Chair, therefore, or the Metro Executive with two appointments, would have the ability to ensure that there was balance on this commission, and she would be able to use that authority to achieve balance and to set the tone for the commission. Also, the chair is going to have to work very closely with the administrative staff of Metro. And it was felt to be important that with the Metro Executive appointing the chair, that would greatly facilitate that kind of relationship between the Metro Executive's administrative staff and the chair of that commission to make sure the job got done. And that was the logic in the appointment. And really, I want to emphasize, by giving the Metro Executive two positions, that allows her to look at the appointments from the local governments, from the Metro Council, and to make appointments if there are some people or issues or interests that need to be represented at the table that are left out from those appointments. That gives her the flexibility to do that from a regional perspective and not from a county perspective or a city or a metro district perspective. And that's why we felt it was very important for her to have those two appointments and the chair.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cease.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share some of Senator Springer's concerns on this. I have no objection to the executive officer appointing a couple of members. I think that puts a balance in there. I'm just wondering about the working relationships of the commission itself, and I'd like to not set up something that might start things off with a big fight altogether, all to begin with. And I guess I wonder if it isn't better to leave that to an elective process within the commission.
Senator Otto, Senator Cease, as we would suggest to you that probably the best way to start this out without a fight would be to have a chair
I knew
appointed.
You were going to say that.
Yes. Left yourself open
you
for
that.
But I say that sincerely. I think there needs to be a strong chair appointed. The chair is going to be critical to the success of this commission. And the whole design here, quite frankly, is to eliminate as many opportunities for squabbling or split votes as possible. For example, we talked about should it be an odd number so that we wouldn't wind up with a tie vote. Well, we decided that actually it might be better if there was an even number of people there, because do we really want a charter provision that it's a 7-6 vote? Is this the kind of charter provision that is going to be supported by the voters? So we wanted to set up from the very beginning a feeling that this is a group that as much as possible needs to operate on consensus, and it needs a strong chair, and it needs to hit the ground running. And it is really our sincere belief that we need a chair appointed, and we need a strong person appointed to that chair so we can do just that.
More questions?
No, Mr. Chair, I was going to ask about comfort levels with the even number, but Burton has covered that.
Mr. Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, relative to that particular element in the legislation, Metro is endeavoring during this particular session, and I hope it's something that we will do in the future, to always come to concurrence between the council and the executive on issues. And on this particular issue, we have complete concurrence that the executive officer should be the appointing authority for the chair.
Okay. More questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't run off.
I'm not sure.
Bonnie, Commissioner Hayes from the chair of the Washington County Commission. Bonnie, it was intentional on my part to have those two go ahead of you so they could give an overview of the bill. Normally, we call on elected officials first. I hope that you will understand.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm delighted to let Burton go first because I'm here to support what he proposed as amendments. I'm Bonnie Hayes. I'm chairman of the Washington County Board of Commissioners, and I have the authority of our full Board of Commissioners to support the proposed 298 as amended, and again as presented by Mr. Wiest and Mr. Devlin. The Board of Commissioners feels very strongly that this opportunity for Metro to have a charter is one that we can support, as we do anything that represents a balanced, thoughtful, objective opportunity to advance either regional cooperation or regional governance. We think that there are those opportunities in the way you've structured the commission, and we have no qualms about who gets how many votes and how they're to come by, because we feel as though the key element to success of the Charter Committee is going to be in the caliber and the attitude of the people that are on there, not who gets what vote. And Washington County intends to take very seriously its opportunity to propose and to have a member on that commission. That is basically it, Mr. Chairman. Again, it's just a matter that we support 298 as amended. We look forward to participating. There's a very strong desire to have a charter that is proposed by this commission be adopted by vote. We had the November vote. The people of our region said, yes, Metro should have a charter. If we cannot, through this process, come forward with a product that is then in turn accepted by vote by our peoples, I think then we'll be setting regional governance and cooperation within the region back at least a decade. So we anticipate doing everything we can to be supportive and working with the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Bonnie?
Thanks.
Bonnie, thank you.
Hearing and then going to work session. This is Senate Bill. Okay. We can hold a hearing on that. We hold the work session on both.
Okay. The next bill before us, pardon me, is there anyone else that would like to testify on 298? If not, I'll close the hearing on it, and then we'll go into work session a little later. Next bill up is Senate Bill 299. And we see Burton's friendly face in front of us again. Tell us all about it.
Mr. Chairman, Burton Wiest, on behalf of the Metropolitan Service District Metro, and with me is Dan Cooper, who is the chief legal counsel to Metro. If it would not be totally out of order, Mr. Chairman, just one comment, if I may, on the last bill regarding the dollar amount. If I may, Mr. Chairman, or is the hearing? If we do, on line 37, have it read an amount equal at least two, and then delete the following language till greater on line 38, and then insert $100,000. It does both what Senator Springer and Senator Cease raised. So it's a simple, would be a simple amendment, and an amendment that could be would solve both your problems, I think, which I appreciated your pointing out, because it says at least, and it doesn't. There's nothing in here that limits an additional expenditure or other sources of funds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for that transgression. Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Dan Cooper, if agreeable to the committee, to go through Senate Bill 299, which we describe internally as our omnibus bill, because it deals with several issues dealing with the Metro statute. So I'd like to ask Mr. Cooper to go through the bill for you very briefly, if he may, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Daniel Cooper. I'm an attorney employed by the Metropolitan Service District as its general counsel. Senate Bill 299 has been prepared at the recommendation of Metro, and we've worked with legislative counsel over the interim in putting this bill together, basically to solve what in some cases are housekeeping measures and in other are relatively minor changes to the statutes that I wouldn't describe as housekeeping, because they do have some policy or substantive impact. And I'd like to go through the five provisions, main provisions of the bill in sequence, and lay out what they do for you. And when I'm done, or any time you want to interrupt me, please feel free to ask me questions. The first section of the bill amends the present provisions of Oregon law providing for the appointment of members of a boundary commission, where the boundary commission is located inside the boundaries of a metropolitan service district, to continue the process that was adopted by the 1987 legislature, to have that boundary commission be appointed by the Metro Executive Officer from nominations made by members of the Metro Council. Prior to the 1987 session, the Boundary Commission had been appointed by the governor in the Metro region, Portland region. In 1987, the legislature changed the process and put a four-year sunset clause on that act that expires on July 1st of 1991. What this bill in front of you does now is to, in effect, continue that appointment process indefinitely and remove the sunset clause. I won't call that housekeeping, because I think that's a substantive measure, but it's fairly straightforward. The second provision of the bill is much less substantive, and it simply changes the description of the circuit court that would have authority to review proposed ballot titles or explanatory material proposed for printing in the state voters pamphlet from being the circuit court in the case of Metro, where in the county containing the most Metro population, to the circuit court where Metro's administrative offices are located. And the reason we're proposing that change is to make it parallel to all the other provisions of Oregon law, which would call for Metro actions to be reviewed by the circuit court located in the county where our administrative offices are located. For some reason, when this bill allowing the voter pamphlet information to be included and providing for judicial review of those statements was drafted, the designation of most populous county was included. Right now, our offices are inside Multnomah County, which is the most populous county, and it wouldn't change anything. But if in the future either another county was to become more populous than Multnomah County and our offices didn't move, or if our offices were to move, we would then have one circuit court hearing all Metro measures rather than one circuit court hearing most of them and another circuit court having very limited jurisdiction over the ballot titles. The third provision of the bill would provide for a 90-day effective date after adoption of Metro ordinances as a general rule. The present statute provides for Metro ordinances to go into effect immediately. That provision wasn't amended after the legislature added a veto power for the executive officer, and it doesn't provide for the addition of an emergency clause to non-tax ordinances the way either the legislature or other local governing bodies have authority to put an emergency clause on an ordinance when they deem it necessary so that they can have an immediate effective date and thus preclude a referendum and leave the voters with the power of initiative but not the power of a referendum on an ordinance. So the language that's in front of you would reconcile our statute to be parallel to both state law and the law on when county ordinances become effective and put a 90-day clause in there automatically unless there was an emergency clause.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Bunn.
If you'd just clarify for me now, with the status quo, if you pass an ordinance that is a non-budget ordinance, the citizens can refer that.
It would go into effect immediately, but every single one of them could be referred.
Okay. And under the proposed change, you could use the emergency clause, and with those that you chose to use the emergency clause, they could not be referred.
That'd be correct, except for the statute precludes us from adding an emergency clause to certain tax ordinances so that we could not adopt a tax with an emergency clause and defeat a referendum in that case.
And a